NFL Live. With Cam Newton's arrival in New England, will the Patriots run an offense we've yet to see? Dan Orlovsky tells us what we can expect. Plus, Brett Favre weighs in on how the Packers should use Jordan Love this year. Could we see a two-quarterback offense in Green Bay? And what does that mean for the future of Aaron Rodgers? And the moment is here. Boomer reveals the top five plays in NFL history. Tyree's helmet catch. The immaculate reception. Where do they rank? Stick around and find out. Hello, everybody. Happy to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon. I'm Wendy Nix, along with Booger McFarland, Dan Orlovsky, and Dan Graziano. It is a change of venue for Cam Newton, the former Panthers quarterback, in a blog post on his YouTube channel Monday. Bid farewell to Carolina and hello to New England just one day after he agreed to a one-year incentive-laden deal with the Patriots. His new teammate, Devin McCourty, shared his reaction to the news.
I think for every player, I always remember Bill saying this every year, your role will be decided by you. And I don't think he'll have a role coming in other than to just be himself. Obviously, he's a guy, he's won MVP, he's been there Super Bowl. So with that, he'll come with life experience, NFL experience, that I think everyone, not just in the quarterback room, but everybody on the team can benefit from. And I think that comes with him just with who he is.
Julian Edelman tweeted this morning, Newton, Massachusetts, with appropriate fonts. Let's work is the hashtag. But Tom Brady had a thing to say. He responded with, I will always be your number one. That might be true, but he's moved on. Before signing Cam Newton, our football power index projected the Bills as the favorite in the AFC East, just slightly ahead of the Patriots. But now, after signing the 2015 MVP, FBI believes the Patriots have the best chance to win the division. Keep in mind, New England has won the AFC East title, an NFL record, 11 straight seasons. Could it be lucky number 12? Dan Graziano, I'll start with you. What are the reasonable expectations for Cam Newton?
I think that there's a wide range of potential outcomes here, Wendy, and the Patriots make this deal for very little money, very little guaranteed money. We haven't seen the particulars of the deal yet, but obviously a very low-risk deal and potentially high reward. If Cam Newton is fully healthy and plays like he was playing a couple of years ago before he hurt his shoulder, then the Patriots have a high-level quarterback that could elevate them back to Super Bowl contender status. This is the way they look at it because of the number of things Cam Newton can do that other players just can't. On the other end, he has been a guy that has sat out there on the market for a couple of months without interest from any teams other than the Patriots at this point. And if he isn't healthy, if the concerns that led to him sitting on the free agent market as long as he did turn out to be justified, then the Patriots, you know, aren't committed to him for any, even this season. He might be a player who doesn't even make their team if he gets to camp and he isn't healthy. So I think the expectations are that he'll come in, show them what he's got, and their hope would be that he shows them a lot and ends up being their quarterback and leading them to great things.
Well, it wasn't so long ago that we saw Newton as one of the top dual-threat quarterbacks in the league. So, Dan Orlovsky, let me ask it like this. What does the Patriots' offense look like with Newton as the quarterback?
Pre-snap, it'll be very similar. Post-snap, like nothing we've ever seen before. Here's the thing. Cam is going to mask their greatest weakness, which is the skill players on the outside. And when you play a defense that knows your skill players aren't great, what defenses do is they'll put a safety in the middle field. They'll leave their corners on the outside. And then that will allow them to have an extra defender near the ball. And that's what makes it so hard to run the football. But New England is now going to have a quarterback that's willing to run the ball and kind of even up the numbers. And that's what's going to stress the defense constantly, which Josh McDaniels. So look at what defense will try to do. They'll try to put eight people down at the line of scrimmage to defend against however many that you have. Pre-snap motion to get somebody in the backfield to help this run game. Something New England is notorious for doing. So now what you have is seven guys in the backfield. You're still down one to what defenses want to do against you. And you can run a generic run play, lead blocker, and pull backside people. But what you do is you pick a defender and single him out, make him know, and you give him to the quarterback. Now it is 7-on-7, and you just teach the quarterback, read that single defender. If he takes that tailback, no one is accounting for you. There is not an extra defender that is left there, and you now have a viable quarterback that is willing to be a runner. That is what is such so challenging for teams when you don't have a quarterback that is a runner. You're always facing somebody that you can't block. The defense always has one more than you can do, or one more than you can account for when it comes to the run game. Now that New England has somebody as a runner, a quarterback, it's going to take a lot of pressure off those skill players on the outside, and it's going to allow Josh McDaniels week to week. What he'll do, Wendy, is go, all right, we're playing San Francisco. Their best player is Nick Bosa. We're going to always have him be the guy that we don't block. Cam, you've got him. And put him in conflict. Or when we play the Rams, it'll be Aaron Donald. That's where we're going to see a ton of creativity after the snap for New England.
Well, you might be onto something, Dan, because since Newton entered the league in 2011, the Panthers ran 815 zone read plays when he was on the field. But on the other hand, the Patriots ran the fewest zone read plays of any team during that span, just eight. We could be in store then for a completely remodeled Patriots offense, something Randy Moss touched on earlier.
I think we are getting ready to really see how fun that offense can really be. You know, not discrediting anything that Tom accomplished, because he accomplished some great things, but I think being able to have a guy like Cam Newton that can run the ball, they're able to spread guys out, and then being able to be that viable threat in the passing game that he could just tuck the ball and run. All those great things, those intangibles that Cam Newton is going to bring to the table, all of those are great. But like I said, I think the biggest picture or the biggest concern for us as fans is if he's able to be accurate with the ball, the sky's the limit for that offense and that team.
He's headed in the right direction. I mean, he's probably about as healthy as it gets from what I've seen on video, so I think he's ready to bust out. I would never bet against the young man, that's for sure.
Booger, let me get you to weigh in. Can Cam Newton play like he used to?
I think that's the million-dollar question, Wendy. And we're all assuming, and we're all kind of going back in our memory, and we're thinking about yonder years past when Cam Newton was the 2015 NFL MVP, and he was running. He was jumping over defenders. I don't know if that Cam Newton exists anymore. And it's amazing, like when I, even on this show, as Dan did an outstanding job with that telestration, every telestration and every highlight we show, Cam Newton is running the football. He's a 31-year-old quarterback that we're going to ask to continue to do what he did in his early 20s. Is that possible for a guy who was already complaining about getting hit too much, for a guy who went through a shoulder injury, for a guy who's coming off a Lisfranc injury with his foot? We're going to ask him to continue to be what he's always been. I just don't know if that's humanly possible. And so I think a better way to use Cam Newton is to go back to in the 2018 when Norv Turner had him. Norv said, I'm not going to try to remake you, Cam. We're not going to ask you to run the football 20 times a game. You run the ball 8 to 10 times a game, but I'm going to do what you can do best, which is the short passing game, get the ball out of your hands quickly. I'm not going to ask you to do something that you've never done in your career, which is to be accurate 15, 20, 25 yards down the field. He's never done that. And so I'm not going to make a ton of money betting on something that's never happened, albeit 1 year. And to me, that's the anomaly. I think Cam Newton, if he's healthy, can still be a very, very good player. But let's please temper the movement that all of a sudden he's about to turn into Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson himself is already talking about not running the ball so much. And now, 10 years in, we want Cam Newton to continue doing the same thing. I just think it's on us to kind of temper our expectations, because he's not going to be zone read Lamar Jackson, Cam Newton at 31 years old with the injuries that he already has.
I think it's a fair point, Boog. And Grimes, before Cam Newton signed in New England, we talked a lot about Jarrett Stidham with good reason. What does this mean for that young quarterback?
Well, obviously, if it decreases his chances of being this year's starter. Obviously, if Cam Newton in the mix, you would favor him, assuming again that he's healthy. But the Patriots do like Jarrett Stidham. They still do view him as a prospect, as a capable player. There's no harm in continuing to develop him. He's only had 1 year in the league and he didn't play. So if Cam Newton starts this year, he's on a one-year deal. You work with Jarrett Stidham, maybe he's in a position to be the starter next year. Maybe he's in a position to beat out Cam Newton this year in camp. And then the Patriots have in Cam Newton what the Jets had a couple years ago in Teddy Bridgewater. I'm not saying that's the most likely outcome, but Stidham is a guy they think highly of in the Patriots building. They didn't sign Cam Newton because of dissatisfaction with Jarrett Stidham. They signed Cam Newton because they couldn't believe they could get a player like this for this price. So they continue to believe in Jarrett Stidham as a developmental guy and will work with him, and maybe someday down the road he does become their starter.
was a bit of a surprise, and that's an understatement, when the NFL traded up to take Aaron Rodgers' potential successor, Jordan Love, in the first round of April's draft. Brett Favre recently told TMZ he sees a way both quarterbacks could take the field together as soon as 2020.
I think there's ways to incorporate, like much like Taysom Hill with the Saints, use him as a, you know, halfback pass, but occasionally let him run it just to show that you'll do that. But I don't know if you take Aaron out on goal line and put Jordan in and run an option, and then you get crushed, and everyone says, why don't you just use Aaron like you always do and let him use his legs, whatever, by time and make a play, and we win the game. You got to be careful. It could cost you your job, in other words, doing foolish stuff. But I think there is a way to do it that could please everyone.
Oh, boy. That's a tall order. It was the Packers who traded up, clearly. Dano, what's your reaction to what Brett Favre had to say?
Nope. Yeah. This is a bad idea. No. I don't... I feel like Brett may have thought that the Packers drafted Jalen Hurts and not Jordan Love. You know, when we're talking about Taysom Hill, when he was in college, ran for 2,800 yards. He averaged 5 yards a carry, and he had a single season when he went over 1,300. Like, he was a runner with the football during his collegiate career. Jordan Love, when he was at Utah State, averaged 2 yards per carry. He never ran for more than 175 yards in a season. They never used him as a runner. And with a team that was doing anything they could to find ways to win football games, they never used him as a runner. And so it just makes me think like he's never even watched him play. One, Taysom Hill is not the future of the organization for New Orleans at the quarterback spot, or it's unlikely. Jordan Love is. You don't risk that for a potential injury. And the second thing would be this. There was never a moment when you watch Jordan Love on tape and go, that guy would scare a defense as a runner. When you take a secondary quarterback and put him back there like the Eagles will do with Jalen Hurts, he will threaten you both as a runner and a passer. Jordan Love's not going to do that. So this take, I just don't understand how this fits into football.
Yeah, you know, what I would add to that is you know, you can believe about Taysom Hill being the quarterback of the New Orleans Saints. You just got to listen to Sean Payton. Sean Payton thinks he's the future, Orlowski. So you may be getting a call from Sean Payton pretty soon. As far as Jordan Love is concerned, I completely agree with you. I think you and I are sharing a brain when it comes to that. You know, Jordan Love is the quintessential guy. He can move around with his feet, but he's going to throw the football from the pocket. He's 6'3", 6'4", 220 pounds. Taysom Hill was a jack of all trades. He was the punt protector on punt. He played on punt return. He was on kickoff. He was on kickoff return. So when you're talking about the Taysom Hill role, that's not just running the ball or catching the ball out of the backfield. That's playing a multitude of positions, which he does for the New Orleans Saints. So I understand Brett Favre is probably trying to figure out a way. So how can I have this relationship between two quarterbacks the way that Aaron and I existed? How can I have it exist now and be better with Love and Rodgers? And he's saying, you know what? Put them on the field at the same time. It's just not going to work because he doesn't have the same skill set. Nor, Wendy, does he have the mindset. Let's not forget, when you're a quarterback that runs the football, and I learned this from Tim Tebow, you have to have the mindset to search and want the contact. I haven't seen Jordan Love search and want contact based on the film I've looked at. So I like Brett. I like where his mind is going. It's just not going to work.
Yeah, for me, the key is the difference in what each organization has invested in the guy, right? The Packers select Jordan Love with their first round pick, because they think he can be a quarterback, a starting quarterback in the NFL, potentially their starter for a long time. Taysom Hill, an undrafted player. The Saints bring him in. They see he has a lot of different skills. They start thinking, how can we get him on the field? How can he help us? The Packers are not going to look at Jordan Love that way. They look at Jordan Love as a future starting quarterback in the NFL, and their job is to get him ready to become that. So anything that would detract from his first-year development in terms of putting him on the field in the way that Brett Favre is talking about with Taysom Hill, just doesn't seem to fit with what the Packers have invested in Jordan Love and what their future plans are for him. So it seems unrealistic to me based on what I know about that situation.
Yeah, we may have to file that one under sounds nice, looks good on paper, but not going to work. By the way, for what it's worth, the Packers ranked 9th in offensive efficiency last season. So Newton heads to New England. Could he be the best quarterback in the AFC East? Josh Allen May certainly have something to say about that. The third-year pro has rushed for 17 touchdowns of his own over the past two seasons, by far the most for a quarterback. And then there's Ryan Fitzpatrick, Tua Tagovailoa combo in Miami, and another youngster, Sam Darnold, in New York. So, Dan Orlovsky, here we go. You love to rank them. Rank the AFC East quarterbacks based on what to expect in 2020. We're not looking 5 years ahead. We're just talking about this season.
I love that disclaimer to lead off. I would say that number four would be the Miami situation with Ryan Fitzpatrick and Tua. I'd put Sam Darnold at number three. Number two, I would put Cam Newton. And number one, I would place Josh Allen. I'll start at the number three spot of why Sam Darnold's there. Sam Darnold's there strictly because they're still very young around him. There's no really dependent number one wide receiver that he can rely on. And the youth of the offensive line. He's going to be a phenomenal player in this league, but they're a year away. He's going to rely a little bit on Perriman and Denzel Mims. I have Cam at number two because there's so many questions about the skill players, and they will come into factor at some point. Young tight ends and Dalton Keene and Asiasi will be really big part of their team, but they're still like, Mohamed Sanu, is he going to be healthy? Edelman was banged up. Is he going to be healthy? Marquise Lee, is he going to be healthy? There's a lot of question marks. And the reason I have Josh Allen at one is because I love what Buffalo has done. They have quietly put together a very good offensive roster. They got a good young offensive line. Singletary is a really good back, and they drafted Zach Moss out of Utah. And then if you look at their skill players, Wendy, they've got a bona fide number one in Stephon Diggs. Arguably the best slot in football in Cole Beasley. John Brown's very good. And then a young tight end in Dawson Knox. I mean, that is a quarterback's friend. So he's coming off a season of 20 touchdowns. And only 58% completion percentage. If that steps up a little bit, that's got to be a thing that grows, is his completion percentage. But Brian Daboll, that our offensive coordinator, had a really good feel for him going, all right, we're going to play no huddle football, and I'm going to allow Josh Allen to react. I just think that is going to take another step forward. And with those people he has around him, I expect a really good season out of Josh Allen. That's why he's number one.
All right, another country heard from. Boog, what do you think?
You know, it's amazing how when we talk about the quarterback position, we can't just focus on just the quarterback. We talk about the weapons around the quarterback. And so it kind of becomes like an analysis of the entire offensive team. So when you look at what Orlovsky talked about, I really like it, bringing the weapons in it and so on and so forth. Here's what I will say. If we're just talking about just the quarterback position based on the talent, based on your ability to play the position, I would change the order. I think the quarterback that's currently in the AFC East with the most talent is Sam Darnold. I think when Sam Darnold finally got healthy and down the stretch, he got over the mono. Sam Darnold is the most talented quarterback, run, pass, athleticism. He can do it all for the New York Jets. You just are concerned, as Dan alluded to, about some of the weapons around him. I think Josh Allen is going to take that next step. Buffalo reminds me of the teams I played on in Tampa. You know, hadn't been to the playoffs in a while. Then you finally get in and we're knocking on the door and we get knocked out and you come back next year. You bring your entire nucleus back and you finally get over that hump. I like Buffalo and the AFC East because I think the team around Josh Allen, along with what Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott have put together, is going to be really, really good. Cam Newton is the unknown. Like we talked about this earlier in the show. We're trying to wrap our mind around 2020 Cam Newton, but we continue to go back to 2013 with every highlight, with every great play we see, and we just don't know. I think the first couple times we see him move around, see his mindset, because we'll be able to see his mindset if and when he takes off running, how he does it. Does he go out of bounds? Does he try to jump over defenders the way he's done? And, you know, I agree with Dan putting the situation in Miami toward the bottom. Tua may be the most accurate quarterback in the division when it's all said and done because he showed he was very accurate at Alabama. But he's a rookie. Like rookies come into this league, they don't even know where the door to get in the building or leave the building is at. So let's give Tua a little time to figure out where he's at. But the AFC East, even though Tom Brady is gone, you can make an argument that the quarterback position talent level has increased even though Brady is gone.
Which is crazy, something to think about. And here for some perspective, there have been MVP QBs who have had some sex with two teams. Peyton Manning won four MVPs and a Super Bowl during his 13 seasons with the Colts. He then went on to produce record-breaking seasons and another Lombardi Trophy with the Broncos. Kurt Warner earned two MVPs and a Super Bowl ring during his six-season tenure with the Rams. And then in 08, at 37 years old, Warner had his Cardinals team just inches away from a victory in Super Bowl 43. And the aforementioned Brett Favre held up the Lombardi Trophy with Green Bay in 96. The same season, he earned his second of three straight MVP awards. He signed with the Vikings later in his career and lost the 2009 NFC Championship game in heartbreaking fashion. So the Patriots are the first team to lose and add an MVP in the same offseason. And we bring up the quarterback carousel every year. It was never more apparent than this time around when Cam Newton agreed to join the Patriots on Sunday. That completed the circle for these four quarterbacks. Tom Brady to the Bucs, Jameis Winston to the Saints, Teddy Bridgewater landing in Carolina, and then Cam Newton making his way north to New England. So, fellas, time to play a little more or less. And where's Dan Graziano? More or fewer? Is that right, my friend? Okay. Yep, more
or fewer.
That's
correct, Wendy.
Okay, we want to be correct. So, Boog, we'll start
Thank
again
you.
With you. The Bucs, more or fewer? I sound so weird. More or fewer wins than the Patriots this year?
Well, I, if you look at me, I think the Buccaneers are going to have more wins. And I think Tom Brady, even though he's leaving New England, he's going to maybe the most talented roster outside of Kansas City in football. And him being one of the most accurate quarterbacks that we've ever seen, the playmaker, maybe the greatest of all time with those weapons. I mean, I think that's why we all, every analyst that I've seen on any network has really looked at Tampa Bay as a bona fide Super Bowl contender. It is because of the talent level being added to the greatest quarterback of all time.
All right, Dan Graziano, Cam Newton, more or less, 1 year as the Patriots starter.
Yeah, I'm going to say less than 1 year. You can say less when it's only one, as you know, Wendy.
And yeah, see, I changed it right up.
If it's only one, you can say less. The less than 1 year, because I think it could be exactly 1 year, but then let's factor in if he has to miss a game or if they don't play a full season. So I'll say less. I don't see him in New England beyond this year. I think this is a best case for Cam Newton, a springboard to the rest of his career and maybe resuming what might have almost been a Hall of Fame track before he got hurt.
No question. Dan Orlovsky, Tom Brady, more or fewer than 30 touchdown passes this season?
Easy answer. This is more. If you look back at, he had 24 last year with one of the worst skill groups in the NFL. Go back to 2018, he has 29. This is probably the most talented skill player position group he's had since 2007 with Randy Moss. Mike Evans averages about 11 touchdown catches a season. Chris Godwin averages 8. So he's got to find, I don't know, 12 touchdowns between everybody else, including Rob Gronkowski. I'd say more.
All right, finally, Boog, back to you one more time. Cam, more or fewer than 500 yards rushing?
Well, Wendy, I'm going to add a qualifier to this, is that if Cam Newton plays 16 games, I think it'll be more, because he's shown you he's going to run the football 8 to 10 times at minimum if he's a starting quarterback. So you got to think a guy that's playing 16 games, that means he's healthy, that means he's still showing some of that physical prowess. 500 yards will be easy. As a matter of fact, I would say if he only rushes for 500 yards and he starts 16 games, that might be really, really good for New England, because that means that Cam Newton is completing the football and throwing the ball down the field. So I'm going to say more, especially if he plays and starts 16 games.
Well, you're right. And aside from last year, when he did miss all but two games, he's only had two seasons where he didn't rush for at least 500 yards. So if he's healthy, you have to believe he will. Falcons quarterback Matt Ryan was a guest on the Pardon My Take podcast recently. When asked who was the best quarterback in the NFC South, he said, well, currently, yeah, I'll go with myself. Ryan was also asked to predict the Falcons' win total this year, to which he said, I can't do that. I'm going to get roasted for it. And then reluctantly predicted 12 wins. Well, what is Matt Ryan supposed to say? You certainly have to believe in yourself or nobody else will. This should be one of the most competitive divisions in the league. Tom Brady has won the most career starts, including the playoffs in NFL history, while Drew Brees ranks third and Matt Ryan ninth. Then enter Teddy Bridgewater with a respectable 22-13 record of his own. Booger, you got to like the confidence, but he does have stiff competition in the NFC South. What do you think?
Oh, listen, hey, I would think less of Matt Ryan if he said anything else. Like if he came out and said, well, I think Brady or Brees is the best, I would immediately call him if I was his teammate and I'd listen, bro, if you don't have confidence in yourself, then no one else will. So this was expected. And to be honest, when you look at the weapons around Matt Ryan, you look at the weapons around Brees and Brady, if I told you at the end of the 2020 season that Matt Ryan was competing for the MVP and statistically he was the best quarterback, I don't think anyone would really be surprised. But to say that he is the best based on just I don't care what you base it on, whether it's accomplishments or whether you look at how he played the last two or three years. I think you would have to look at Breeze and Brady being above. Ryan will probably be third, and Teddy Bridgewater, not by any fault of his own, just because he hasn't had a full-time starting job in a while, would probably come in last.
All right, Ryan was certainly making the podcast circuit last week. He also told Chris Long on the Greenlight podcast that he believes this group of weapons has the potential to be the best he's played with. Matt Ryan likes his new look offense, and that group will be led by his go-to target, Julio Jones, whose six straight 1,000-yard seasons are tied with Mike Evans for the longest active streak in the league. And the Falcons have more star power in Todd Gurley and Calvin Ridley. They add in supporting players like Hayden Hurst, the tight end, Russell Gage, and running back Brian Hill. All of this got us to talking. Which team in the NFL does have the best group of weapons, a starting five, if you will? And so, Dan Orlovsky, who are your top three starting fives in the league?
Yeah, I mean, number one is Kansas City. I mean, they just got so many riches. It's Tyreek Hill. It's Sammy Watkins. It's Travis Kelce. It's Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I mean, there's just, you could put in Damian Williams in there. Mecole Hardman. I mean, they have group of six. So, like, there's just so many weapons for them to go to. Number two, I would probably put Tampa Bay in there. I mean, Tampa Bay has Godwin and Mike Evans. And then it's really three tight ends. It's Bray, it's O.J. Howard, and obviously Rob Gronkowski. And then Cleveland, I would put at number three when Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry and Austin Hooper and Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. And that's not even adding David Njoku in. And so, you know, the reason why this is such a big deal in comparison to the old days is the old days was about the triplets, right? It was the quarterback, the running back, and the receiver. But with so much space being utilized in the NFL, it's so much more about your starting five, excluding your quarterback. And I don't think there's three teams in the NFL that have a greater starting five. You look at the last three Super Bowls, Wendy, right? 3 years ago, it's the Eagles. Five different players that they could throw the football to. When the Patriots need a drive, they get spread out and they throw it to four different people to beat the Rams. And then last year, those Chiefs, they found a way to continue to distribute the football, and there's so many different matchups. And so those are the three best starting fives in the NFL right now when it comes to weapons.
All right. Graz, your reaction.
Yeah, interesting exercise because, you know, you hear it and you think of some of the better offenses in the league. You think of what Baltimore did last year, but you still have questions about receiver. You think about Dallas, but do they have what they need at the tight end position? So I like it at Cleveland, especially when you mentioned that you could even make it a six if David Njoku shows some improvement this year and does what we think he can do athletically. And if they get better offensive line play, it really underlines that Cleveland team, and I know we said this last year, could be one to watch if they can get it all together because they do have what it takes to score points.
All right, Boog, quickly, you agree with the top three? Again, starting five, top three.
Yeah, I mean, pretty clearly. I think when you look at Orlovsky's list, I mean, one team he's going to bring the running back in, the next team he's not going to bring the running back. So it just depends on how you're going to look at it. I would add the Atlanta Falcons in there, especially if you're going to tell me that the Falcons are healthy. Okay, Matt Ryan, Julio Jones, Calvin Ridley, Todd Gurley. If Gurley's healthy and Gurley can give you a season of what Todd Gurley is, I mean, you're going to tell me that offense is not going to be dynamite based on also the offensive line. They got five first-round picks potentially starting up front. So I would add the Atlanta Falcons to that. They have the potential to be, other than Kansas City, because Kansas City's on a different level because of the quarterback and the speed they have with Tyreek Hill. But I'll say this, other than Kansas City, if the Falcons stay healthy and Matt Ryan gets protection, they have a chance to be the most explosive offense in football outside of Kansas City.
All right, gentlemen, thank you. We shall see. Dan Orlovsky, do you agree? Is the Immaculate Reception, in your opinion, the best play of all time in NFL history?
Yeah, Wendy, just because there's no way to explain it. I mean, it's for me, it's the best one. It's not the best one I've seen. Like, in my lifetime, I'd probably give that to David Tyree in the Super Bowl or Edelman in the Super Bowl. But the Immaculate, I just don't understand how it happened.
Bug?
Well, the thing that I would say is, how can we vote it the best play when in all my years of watching highlights and NFL films, I've never seen the complete play? I see one angle, then it all of a sudden jumps to the other angle. I think it will be more impactful if we saw the play in its entirety. So that's just kind of distorting my view of that being the greatest play of all time. For all I know, they kind of pieced it together and they've been fooling us all these years, man. I have no idea.
For all I know, he says. Graz, you want to have the last word here?
Not quite as many cameras on the field there, Boog, in 1972 as
just
we have
a few
at this
left.
Point. Unfortunately.
Just give me one shot, Graz.
Let the debate continue always. See you tomorrow, everybody.